My name's Sean Collier. There's Robin Hitchcock.
Hello.
And yes, it's Oscar week, weekend, night, or the Oscars happened, depending on when you're hearing this. But this is what we all do it for. Not you. It's pretty much just me and Robin.
There's a nice little subculture of Oscar nerds or awards nerds.
Yes, and you are the most seasoned and knowledgeable of all of them.
Oh, thank you.
So you had to be here to predict the 2018 Oscars. We're going to tell you what's going to win because there's much less drama than usual. But listen anyway, because
yeah.
Best Picture is interesting, and we're not going to talk about it till the end.
Okay.
This week on You Can't Handle...
You can't handle the truth. You can't handle the truth. Hey, all right. Well, thanks for listening to You Can't Handle the Truth. The guys would love it if you would subscribe to them, give them a rating and a review. If you like the episode, please just share it. It's super easy. Your kids can show you how to do it. And you can catch me on Add It Up with Your Best Friend Addie, where I interview musicians, comics, just anybody who entertains me. And I tackle a different topic every episode. So come laugh at us as we laugh at ourselves.
It is You Can't Handle the Truth for Friday, March 2nd, 2018. We will now have a very brief conversation about the Oscars death race because neither of us can remember whether or not we talked about it on the episode we recorded together 3 weeks ago.
Very recently.
If we already talked about this, sorry, we'll keep it brief. But Robin, what's an Oscars death race?
The Oscars death race is when you attempt to watch every nominated film in every category before the Oscars.
And you have been an Oscar nerd, as you say.
As long as I can recall. Actually, the first Oscars I remember was when Winona Ryder was nominated for The Age of Innocence. Because she was the only actor who I knew.
Wouldn't you have been about... four?
No, I think I was like 8 or 9.
Still?
Yeah. And I was like strongly rooting for Winona Ryder.
I mean, the first thing I remember... my first memory of the Oscars was having an awareness that Beauty and the Beast was nominated for Best Picture.
Ooh,
and that
you're
was
right.
And that was an aberration.
Yes.
That was a weird thing.
I remember watching the episode of Siskel and Ebert where they both argued that that should win Best Picture. They did their... we picked the winners. Or at least Gene Siskel said that. I'm not 100% sure Roger Ebert did.
And I remember Whoopi Goldberg having a significant wardrobe malfunction.
She had. She came out in whiteface 1 year that was considered notable.
Maybe this is
as Queen Elizabeth.
A cloudy childhood memory. Yeah. That. So those are my early Oscar memories. The point is, you have and you developed an actual attention to the Oscars as a child.
Correct.
And
I started running an Oscars pool in sixth grade.
And
seventh grade, the Titanic year.
Well,
yes.
that helped with a lot of the young
Correct.
The younger viewers. And despite that, you have never finished the death race.
That is correct. I've never finished. I've been trying. I've been doing my best since roughly 2010. That was when I really started to try.
And what gets in the way? Like last year, we said it was that there was one animated feature that just was not going to come out in America for another month after the Oscars.
Correct. So usually there is something like that.
Yeah.
I also lived in South Africa where normal movies wouldn't have come out yet.
Right.
You know, like I remember Argo came out the weekend of the Oscars there. Mm-hmm. I happened to see it when I was home for Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's also often a movie that I just really, really don't want to watch. And then I choose not to watch it if I don't have to because I'm not going to win anyway.
Right.
But.
Passengers.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, if it had been Passengers or Fail, would you have watched Passengers?
I would have, yes.
Okay. So now, on the verge of completing this task for the first time.
Correct. I'm three films away.
What are they? The Square?
The Square, Loveless, two foreign films, and Agnes Varda's Faces Places.
Oh, yes, which we will watch after this recording. Where are your emotions on the precipice of completing this goal?
It's really exciting.
Yeah. Is it... And I hope that there's a network around you, of people around you, who acknowledges that this is a big deal. And it's not just one of those things where you're really pumped about something that no one you know cares about.
Thank you. I do feel that way. I feel it's been very nice having you as a partner on this
yes.
journey, because you are also set to win.
If one of us wins, it's going to be you.
Okay.
Because I still have 5 features and 2 shorts to go.
Okay.
There's absolutely enough time, but... You know, if somebody died tomorrow, I might run out of time.
That's what I keep saying. I don't want to say I'm going to win, because
right.
even though I have access to all the films that are left, like, what if I get hit by a bus on the way to work?
Exactly. Yes.
What if a
don't
bird steals the DVD, is what Chris Lajek said.
Yes, correct. But it's, you know... When you watch all of them, and I've never done it before either. I this is the closest I'm going to get. But, you know, I always see a whole lot of movies. And when you watch all of them, to some people it sounds like, oh, that's so fun. At a certain point, it is more about achieving it than it's about fun. It is much more about, I'm going to get this done, than, hey, this 127-minute... dose of Russian sad is really how I want to spend my afternoon.
So here's the thing. This year has been easier than other years.
Yeah.
There have not been as many super long movies.
Right.
There aren't as many movies, first of all.
Yeah, it's a pretty low number.
Yeah, and the not so many super long movies. And then really the only movie with 3 to go, the only movie I've hated so far is Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, there are more Oscar nominees than I've hated than that.
Okay.
This year. I really hate Wonder.
I enjoyed Wonder.
I hate The Greatest Showman.
I don't know what to say about The Greatest Showman other than I didn't hate it.
That's
it's
good.
Terrible.
We talked about this the other day.
Yeah.
We're not going to get into politics, but in an era of existential confusion, I am gravitating more and more towards bitter dystopia, and
right.
you are you're going towards things that are just nice.
The word that you used, which I think is very appropriate, is pure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Wonder, for example, is just a movie about how human emotions are complex and strong and worthwhile, right? That's to me what that movie was. And it's very cloying, but I wanted to cry like the entire time.
Did you pay attention to Homestar Runner in the day of Homestar Runner?
I vaguely remember the existence of Homestar Runner.
Homestar Runner was a long-running web cartoon series, everybody. And there was a bit at one point when Strong Bad, the cynical villain character...
Mm-hmm.
needed to make Homestar cry, he would show him a picture of a one-legged dog named Lil Brudder who wanted to be on the football team. That's what Wonder was. Like, man, this child is adorable and sweet, and all of his family members have the purest love, and everyone just wants niceness. Weep now.
Yep. Liked it.
Yeah, I can't get on board with that level of cloying.
Yeah.
But that said, provisional congratulations.
Thank you.
For your completion of the Oscars death race. And let's talk about things that regular folk might be interested in.
Sure.
And we'll get to the predictions in a minute. Is there like a meta narrative to the Oscars this year? I can't find it.
So... What I'm thinking about is how this is maybe the year where a pattern forms, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Because we have this new academy, right? They did the reforms of membership and
right.
there, you know, everything that April Rain has done with Oscars So White.
Mm-hmm.
and just the national conversation about, you know, inclusion and representation.
If you're not someone who follows the Oscars closely, after a couple of years of a staggering lack of minority nominees, the Academy basically invited in a whole lot of members who aren't old white guys.
Right.
Because the vast, vast, vast majority of the Academy is old white guys.
And changed it so you need to remain active in the film industry.
Right.
So you have a 10-year period of membership, and if you remain active, then you stay in, unless you are a former nominee or winner. Then you'll get a lifetime voting right.
Yeah, that seems fair.
Which I think is nice.
And there was a question before last year of, okay, did letting this couple hundred to couple thousand people in actually have a meaningful effect? And then a tiny indie movie about a black gay man beat the Oscariest movie that ever Oscared for Best Picture. So, yes, apparently it did.
Right.
We'll see. We're waiting this year, I think, is what you're saying, to see if that was a fluke or a kind of gut response,
right,
or if things are different now and the old rules about what is an Oscar movie are gone now.
Right. But my concern is that, you know, the old white men are still largely there.
Yes.
And I'm concerned we're going to have a, you know, switch from Obama to Trump kind of thing.
It could be.
Where, like, I know that with those very obnoxious honest ballot articles, mm-hmm. like, a lot of people are saying things like, oh, well, we did the gay story last year. We did the black story last year.
Yeah.
I don't think Lady Bird has an epic scope, right? So they, I think, are feeling emboldened mm-hmm. by, oh, we took care of you last year. Now let us have
that old membership.
Right.
But is there a is there a thing for that part of the membership to rally around?
I would have guessed Dunkirk, but no one seems to like Dunkirk.
No, it's, and I like Dunkirk well enough. And Aaron Kleiber, flash plug. Aaron Kleiber isn't here because this Saturday at the Carnegie Library of Homestead Music Hall, he will be recording his comedy special.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
Of everybody. Saturday night the 3rd, go to GrownDadBusiness.com for tickets. I'm on the show. Jason Clark, the co-host of Grown Dad Business, is on the show. This is a crowning achievement, not just for Aaron, but for stand-up in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
It's going to be a great night. That's why Aaron's not here for this episode, because there are so many preparations. If you knew all the things he's doing, you would actually understand what a big deal this is. There is a crew of dozens working to make this happen. And we both know, in the comedy community, there's usually not a vast support network behind our endeavors.
No.
It's usually the people on stage and then maybe one other person. So
sometimes.
Yeah. So
look, I've got a network of people who I could say I need a fake gun in the next 3 hours.
No, but you don't have 3 hour production meetings with your team.
Generally, no.
Right. So they're doing a lot to really make this a special night. Please come out, get your tickets now at GrownDadBusiness.com. 2 shows. The 10 o'clock is going to be a little loopy. There is the plug. We will be there. Come on out. That's why Aaron's not here. Why did I end up flash?
Because we were talking about Dunkirk.
It was his number one movie of the year.
Okay.
So there are some people that really like it. But that's not the actual Oscar movie to me, because it's a Christopher Nolan action movie. And Christopher Nolan's not an Academy darling at all.
This is his first time nominated.
Yeah. So then you go, well, The Post, but clearly with the way The Post was represented, the Academy wasn't that crazy about it.
Yeah.
Darkest Hour is a performance movie that somehow oddly snuck onto the Best Picture list. I would be more worried about that if this year had a La La Land, but I don't think it does.
So I guess the front runner is considered 3 Billboards.
Right. Which we will break this race down in detail a little bit later.
Right.
But in this meta-narrative, is 3 Billboards an Oscar-y, Oscar-y, Oscar movie for the old white guys?
No, absolutely not. But it does, the meta-narrative surrounding it is that it is a racially insensitive movie. And
yeah, that's, yeah.
White guys who liked it because it's got witty screenwriting, and you can explain why you liked it.
Yeah. Hey, I'm a white guy who likes witty screenwriting.
Is that what's like? That's sort of what I saw in it.
It has really strong performances.
Okay.
And yes, I really love. I mean, I'm a big fan of Martin McDonagh because I like putting quirkified characters in extreme situations and just kind of letting it unspool.
Okay.
A lot of his plays are like that.
Okay.
And I think he did that really well there. I like just the entertainment and artful, sure, value of creating a bunch of compelling characters, getting great people to play them, and letting it kind of unravel in this, you know, there's no structure to this plot, just one thing's going to happen and then the next thing's going to happen way, and I love Gallows humor. So, I liked it a lot. It was my number three movie of the year, which I always remember, because three billboards.
There you go.
But, that said, I really hope it doesn't win.
Right.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is that, so, you know, like, there was this backlash in quotation marks to it, and largely because, you know, critics of color were acknowledging these, you know, shortcomings. And I feel like these imaginary old white guy block, okay,
right.
who they're not imaginary.
Yeah.
I feel like they would be like, well, you can't say that. It's a great movie. And be emboldened in liking it.
No, that's...
I am definitely imposing a lot of emotion onto this.
No. That's very possible, especially because I have, like, I have a shitty, white-splainy, you know, excuse for the things that are making people mad about.
Right.
Which I'm not going to lean into because I know what my demographics are, and I know that, you know, I'm going to be inclined to try and find that excuse when... there's something that I want to like.
Similarly, there was a piece in, I think, Teen Vogue, and I can't remember the writer, that said that Lady Bird was just Real Women Have Curves rehashed. And I haven't seen Real Women Have Curves since I was in high school, or maybe early college. I loved it then. But my, you know, gut white reaction was like, no, I need Lady Bird in my life. I have to have it.
Yeah. No, my gut reaction to hearing that was that backlash against Three Billboards was, I hate to even voice it because it sounds condescending, but it's like, you know, a bad character having an arc doesn't necessarily make that arc redemptive, and a protagonist and antagonist ending up in the same place at the end of the movie does not necessarily mean that they are literally on the same side. You know,
I thought it had more systemic problems than that,
which may well be correct.
Yeah, I mean, are we allowed to like just start talking about Three Billboards now, or am I messing with the structure of this podcast?
Now we have teased Three Billboards tension, which we will get back to shortly, and I do mean shortly because honestly, among the other races you want to hear about, there's not a whole lot of drama. We read the nominees a couple of episodes ago, so we're not going to go through it that way again. Let's hit these acting races, just because there's not a
They're
whole
all sewn
lot
up.
To say. And I'll let you speak first on these. Let's start with supporting actress.
I think it's going to be Allison Janney. There's like a sliver of a chance that Laurie Metcalf gets through it. She would be my vote. But Allison Janney is brilliant, and I'm excited for her. It's a very, very strong category this year.
Yeah. Oh, it's both of the both supporting actress and lead actress are great categories. This is the only acting race where I would say I guess there could be a quote unquote upset, and Laurie Metcalf could win. But I think it's going to be Allison Janney, and as someone who's liked her a lot for a long time and acknowledging that she's not the kind of person that plays performances that get nominations, this is really cool and exciting.
I agree, totally. And I'm excited to see what she's going to wear.
Yes. Supporting actor.
Oh, it's going to be Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's the sliver that maybe Willem Dafoe will get all of the Florida Project people who are sad that didn't get more nominations.
Yeah, I think it's sliverless. Like, I understand I think that's hanging around because until awards started happening, everyone assumed Willem Dafoe was the front runner.
Right.
And then every single award Sam Rockwell has won. Nothing's going to change that now, especially when Florida Project didn't get any other nominations. Like, it clearly the Academy was not that crazy about Florida Project.
Which I just watched, and it was so good. Oh, my gosh.
It's so good. Yeah. And
I, like, full-on sobbed for, like, 5 minutes at the end.
And Brooklyn Prince should be nominated. She should be nominated as lead actress.
I would immediately, when the movie was over, I was like, who would I take out? And I don't know who I would take out.
Meryl.
Because it's... Oh, she's
I know.
So good.
But
I guess she has enough.
Yeah, she's cool. She's cool. And
but that was her best performance in 10 years.
Yes, but this is a year that there could be 10 best actress
You're right.
nominees, because we also talked about how Daniela Vega should be nominated.
Yeah.
Jessica Chastain could certainly be nominated, and a 5-year-old. That was such a brilliant performance. And it's such a good movie. It's on your on-demand service now. Watch it. But, yeah, Sam Rockwell is definitely going to win. And I like him so much, and I'm glad he'll have an Oscar.
Okay.
Do you have feelings about him?
I loved Moon.
Did you watch Mute yet?
No.
Ah. Apparently they tie in. I haven't seen Moon, but I have seen Mute.
I was thinking about this the other day. There was something that he was in when I was young. So, like, early
Confessions
in his career.
Of a Dangerous Mind?
Earlier than that, where I was like, I like this guy. And then he did a bunch of movies where I didn't like him as much.
I've thought of him the same way I think of Allison Janney. Like, here's an underrated guy who is always gold.
He's the best part of Iron Man 2, which is not a high bar.
That is, a fun fact, that is one of the two Marvel Cinematic Universe movies I have not seen.
I think that might be where he met his long-term partner, Leslie Bibb.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, well, they're both in that movie, so...
That's nice. I don't know what this movie you saw him in as a child would have been, because I've never heard of any of these movies before Green Mile and Celebrity. But,
I think I'm counting myself as a child when I saw Green Mile.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm not sure if that was it.
In any case, he's a person I'm happy to have on the squad of Oscar winners.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if this performance was anything special, but...
It's interesting that his character is sort of the center of the controversy.
Yeah.
And then that's not where it's going to back. If the backlash,
no.
It doesn't matter. I mean, part of that is, like, we'll get into it. The whole
Best
Picture is more of a toss-up because of preferential voting.
Yeah, I think that thing you just described as your fear about why Three Billboards is going to win definitely gets him the trophy.
Yeah.
Like, because that voting block you're talking about goes... Even if that's true, the performance is still a fine performance. So
which is fair.
He's going to win. Lead actor.
Gary Oldman.
Yeah, it pisses me off that this isn't a race.
I keep thinking about how Timothy Chalamet gave the best performance I saw this year, which is saying something.
I do disagree, but
I keep thinking about the credits. I keep thinking about how you could, like, feel that his tears were hot.
Okay.
And I am sad that he's not going to get an Oscar.
I'm not sad about that. I'm sad about Daniel Kaluuya, who I thought gave the best performance.
You know what?
Male performance.
I'm totally cool with that opinion also. Because the face acting.
So good.
He's, like, so in control of every single
I know.
Muscle fiber in his face.
It's so great. And look, Gary Oldman... speaking of people who apparently didn't get caught up in the Me Too movement, okay, all right, I guess this is arbitrary. Let's move on. Should we move on? Do you have something to say about this? You're the one who told me that he was a guy with a questionable past.
That is correct, and I did not know that until the night that he won the Golden Globe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we put that aside for a minute, which we shouldn't, but if we do...
It was Galaxy Quest.
Oh, okay,
was
sure.
Was how I fell in love with Sam Rockwell.
Yes, that's a fine choice.
So,
if we put that aside, I like Gary Oldman just fine. He's other than that.
Before this, I was like, you know what? It's time. He deserves it.
But that's it. It's not, he was so good in that, whatever.
But also, like, that's the thing, is that this is not a year when we need to give a career crowning Oscar. There's...
Yeah.
Many strong performances.
Yeah.
Like, it's... And also, he's not, like, at the end of his career, right?
No.
So, wait until he does another movie like this. Because right. He was fine. And I think also there's, like, the whole, like, makeup acting thing. Like, people who are like, he disappears into the role. Like,
then give it the makeup award.
Right.
Yeah.
And, like, also because I finally saw Charlize Theron in Monster.
Oh, yeah.
And that, I believe...
On your podcast.
Yes. I have a podcast called Theronathon.
I was like, here.
I was like, right.
Make
I have a
it
podcast
seamless.
Called Theronathon with my friends Regina Connolly and Bob Shields, and we've been watching every Charlize Theron movie. We are 4/5 of the way through.
Oh, congratulations.
And you can listen to it on all of the places where you listen to podcasts.
But don't think that because they're 4/5 of the way through that this project is ending soon. No, it will just morph.
That's right. Eventually, we will have the Keanu review.
And I am excited for it, despite not liking Keanu Reeves at all. Which
yet.
I didn't think was a thing that would get me heat until I met all of you people.
Yeah.
you are the epicenter of this little galaxy of unabashed Keanu Reeves like devotees.
I don't know how it happened, but I'm so lucky.
Yeah. I just always thought, it wasn't just that I always thought, oh, yeah, he's a really bad actor. It was that I never thought that opinion would ever be questioned by anyone. And then I met all of you.
Here's the thing. This is such a sidebar.
Yeah.
I have been in love with Keanu Reeves since Bill and Ted. And
sure. Good casting.
I endured many years of ridicule for this, but he has... After John Wick, it suddenly stopped being uncool to love Keanu Reeves.
No, it. I will admit that he circled back around to what, I mean, like, Bill and Ted and Speed, he's perfect.
Yeah.
20 years of, oh no, followed for me.
Well, what
and
about The Matrix?
I fully lump that in.
Okay.
I think that is a, why didn't I pick that? Oh my God. I'm sorry, I'm having a... revelation that's interesting to nobody, but I'll explain it anyway. As you have heard, if you're a long-term listener, all couple dozen of you, we did our week of overrated films at Row House Cinema, and I had trouble picking movies that I think are very overrated that everyone else loves, and so ended up including Friday the 13th, which I don't even think is overrated. I think it's rated just where it should be.
Yeah.
And in the process of coming up with those movies, I just never considered the fact that I think The Matrix is hella overrated.
Oh my goodness. Hey, this is difficult for me.
I haven't seen it since I was, you know, not when it came out, but soon after, within a year or two after. But it's like, oh yeah, a dystopian sci-fi thing that thinks it's smart. There aren't four of those a year.
I love The Matrix.
I know. I'm sorry. This is what happens to me. This is why I would have been the perfect parent, because the other one was The Shawshank Redemption. Good movie. Super overrated.
Okay.
And people get so sad when I say that. And The Matrix would have been perfect. Oh, well.
Next time.
Anyway, all of this is to say, listen to Theronathon, listen to Keanu Review in the future. I already declared that I'm going to be on to talk about a movie called Neon Demon that only Robin and I saw.
And it's amazing. I can't
That's
wait for that
so
episode.
Great.
So anyway, Charlize Theron, she, you know, in Roger Ebert's review, he said he didn't know who it was, right? She had enough makeup on that she was literally unrecognizable, but that's not what made the performance great.
Right.
And Gary Oldman, this did not feel like that.
No. And it's.
And also, what a boring movie.
It's a really boring movie. It is one of those movies that is technically good. I probably gave it a 7, an 8, or an 8, because technically it is very...
fine.
All the movie things very well. And it's not interesting. It is interesting mainly as a companion piece to Dunkirk.
Yeah.
And that performance, I'm not going to tell you he's not good, but I am going to tell you that if you talk to actors, that's kind of the easy work, is like imitation plus anger. That's sort of the easier realm of acting.
Because you don't have to create the character.
You don't have to create the character, and anger is kind of the easiest emotion to play.
Mm-hmm.
It could, because it's the showiest emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I do not share your love for Timotei. No one actually pronounces it that way, right?
No.
Okay. That's sad.
French people do. Maybe his dad does.
But I definitely think that was a stronger performance than Gary Oldman's, because it was so subtle and had so much internal life.
Yeah.
But Daniel Kaluuya, and again, I wasn't a big fan of Phantom Thread, but Daniel Day-Lewis was better than Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know who wasn't? Denzel Washington.
Yeah, that was a dumb movie.
Wow.
That was a dumb, dumb movie.
Wow. Do you know that it's written and directed by Tony Gilroy's brother, Dan? Tony Gilroy, who made Michael Clayton?
Okay, sure.
Can you imagine making a far inferior version of your brother's movie?
Listen, here's what... Look, scene from 2,000 to 3,000 Oscar voters' desks on voting day. They have already filled out their ballots with James Franco, the disaster artist, written on their nominating list. It turns out that James Franco is the worst. They go over, cross out his name, and write Denzel Washington just automatically.
Yeah.
Because that's the name that goes there. Like,
that's
Meryl
correct.
Streep is the name that goes in Best Actress. They then, these 2,000 people, then went back and checked what movie Denzel did this year. That's how that got nominated.
Yeah.
But Gary Oldman's definitely going to win. It's not even a race. And lead actress, this is a dazzling collection of five performances.
Wow, right? What a year.
And I think Sally Hawkins is the best. I think that Saoirse Ronan is not the best of these, but it is, did such beautiful work that is the opposite of Gary Oldman, is the least flashy and showy imaginable, and it was perfect.
So for me, this is a weird comparison. It's like Russell Crowe in Gladiator, where it's like, hey,
okay,
that's a great movie, and it's sitting on your shoulders.
Yeah.
So you get an award.
Yeah.
That's sort of where I am with her in that movie.
Yeah. And Margot Robbie did work that never wins an Oscar,
right,
but she did it perfectly. And
she, I think, would be my vote, by the way. So Sally Hawkins was originally, I think that's what I pressured you to vote for.
Yes.
And that's sort of more strategic based, right?
Right.
But now that Frances McDormand has it locked down,
yeah,
I think that I might give my heart vote to Margot Robbie.
That's totally fair, particularly as a comedic performer yourself.
Yeah. Yes.
It's, you know, the person who gives a lot of life and heart to an ultimately comedic performance never wins an Oscar.
Yeah. But that's also true of Saoirse Ronan. So
yeah, sure. But as you indicated, all of this is irrelevant. Frances McDormand is definitely going to win. And fine.
And like, I'm cool with Sam Rockwell being in the club, I'm very cool with her being in the Two Timers Club.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
And if there is one thing that you absolutely want to award from Three Billboards, that's it.
Yeah.
It's a shame we can't give them all statues, but mm-hmm. I have no problem with Frances McDormand.
Yeah.
As she certainly will. Briefly, before we get back to the big conversation, I guess the screenplay races are kind of interesting. I think Get Out is going to win, because I don't think it's going to win anything else, but apparently this is a horse race actually between Get Out and Three Billboards, and boy,
so,
is that a microcosm of what you were talking about.
I thought that Three Billboards had this locked down, because to me it was like, okay, what is the actual strength here other than the performances? It's that there's jokes, right? Unfortunately, I think the story is a mess, and you describe that as a virtue, and I understand that perspective.
Yeah.
But to me, that says this is not a great screenplay.
Sure.
Whereas Get Out is like a perfect screenplay.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if we talked about this, I think, before, like whether or not voters actually read the script.
Yeah. The Critics' Choice Awards are much more do what you want.
Right.
Than the Oscars voting. We do not receive instructions for how to approach things. But I never have. I mean, I might page through one if I'm really thinking about it. I don't sit down and read the scripts, because to me, part of best screenplay is also a screenplay that works on the screen. It's so not just how it works on
the
screen.
That makes
sense. Yeah.
And I haven't read the Get Out screenplay, but I have heard that it's amazing. That, like, the way that it is written as a piece of writing is also impressive. So I'm going to pick Three Billboards to win this.
Okay.
Because I am so strongly digging my heels into the it won't win Best Picture camp.
Okay.
So I'm sort of, I think, doing the opposite of what you're doing.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's one of those. I forget what else is even in here. The Big Sick, Lady Bird, and Shape of Water. Shape of Water's strength is not its screenplay. Lady Bird's has a great screenplay, but the tide is not blowing in that direction.
It's an honor to be nominated.
And The Big Sick is, it's an honor to be nominated.
Right.
We very nearly were nominated for nothing.
Right.
So it's going to be one of those two. Decide who you trust more. You should trust Robin more. Best Adapted Screenplay, I think, is pretty sewn up for Call Me By Your Name.
So that's partially a Lifetime Achievement Award. Well-deserved.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like, James Ivory is in the, you know, stratosphere of Hollywood legends who don't have an Oscar yet.
Yes.
So, and great movie.
It's an excellent script. Again, you like it so much more than I do. I liked it a whole lot. You like it so much more than I do, but the script is pretty perfect.
Right.
The other one that I guess is in the race is Mudbound, like in that kind of...
deserves something.
Right. Are they going to throw Mudbound one Oscar? I don't think they are.
I don't think that they are.
The other three things in this race, Disaster Artist, Logan, and Molly's Game, don't have any kind of a chance.
All, it's an honor to be nominated.
I mean, Molly's Game was everything I just said about Denzel Washington with Aaron Sorkin.
So. Yes.
Best Director...
I think that Guillermo del Toro has this sewn up. I think that it's going to... And good for him.
Yeah, I'm very happy that a monster-loving nerd...
Correct.
...wrote enough monster nerd movies that eventually everyone was like, okay, yeah, this is the one. Yeah.
The one with the fucking of the fish monster.
Yeah, it's interesting. In a lot of ways, this is the weirdest one. I mean, we'll put the Hellboy movies aside for
right,
a moment.
Sure.
But like... Pan's Labyrinth and other thing in between that I'm forgetting, that ghosty one, which wasn't very good, Crimson Peak.
I didn't see that.
Those are way more like palatable movies than Shape of Water should be. But Shape of Water is also just really sweet.
Yeah.
So
it's pure.
Yes, it's another pure movie. He's going to win, and I'm very happy.
Yes.
Can
we talk briefly about how interesting it's become? And again, this is sort of teasing the Best Picture conversation.
Yeah.
Director and Best Picture are no longer tied the way that they used to be.
No. I wonder if there's a generational aspect to this, because I never, in evaluating a movie, I never felt that way.
You never were like, what a great director.
No, I never thought that the best directed movie must also be the best movie.
Okay.
I always, from when I first started looking at movies critically, direction was a data point, not necessarily that distinct above acting or writing or ineffable magic qualities.
Right.
Like, directing was one thing on the list. So maybe the old Hollywood view is closer to the best movie is the movie that was the best directed, but in my mind, those are very different things.
Right.
How do you feel about direction?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. I think it is an overall positive that these categories aren't tied the way that they used to be.
Yeah.
Because I think, A, it allows more movies to get nominated and to win.
Yeah.
And B, it is less boring.
Yeah. I mean, as an Oscar nerd, I do dream of seeing the next sweep, seeing the next actor, actress, director, picture sweep. But, you know, that'll be exciting when it happens if the thing deserves it. And if nothing is that, and if nothing is Silence of the Lambs, then I don't want that to happen.
Right.
And I'm trying to see if there's anything, now that we're a good 38 minutes into the podcast, anything else that should... That demands to be discussed. It's nice that they're doing the songs again this year.
I'm very happy that the songs will be performed. I think Remember Me is going to win.
Yeah, agreed. If I'm going to post my predictions various places, they're definitely going to be on my Popcorn for Dinner blog at Pittsburgh Magazine. If you really care how many technical awards I think Dunkirk is going to win, the answer is 4. If you want to know what those are, it'll be up there. And Robin, I assume you will share these things. Or do you want to just rattle them off?
I have it for editing, cinematography, and the sound categories.
That's the same 4 I have it
Yay!
For. Yay! Okay, hey, we're here. My list, cinematography, Dunkirk, costume design, Phantom Thread, editing, Dunkirk, makeup, Darkest Hour, production design, The Shape of Water, sound categories, Dunkirk, visual effects, Blade Runner.
The only difference I have is War for the Planet of the Apes for visual effects.
I just won't. My brain will not allow itself to even anticipate War for the Planet of the Apes being an Oscar winner.
All right.
But War for the Planet of the Apes is the front runner.
Yeah.
And The Shape of Water is, I hope, wins Best Original Score. Although I guess Phantom Thread is in that race.
It's a great score, but Shape of Water is going to win.
I didn't realize that the guy who wrote it is in Radiohead. Mm-hmm. He's a guy from Radiohead. Not the guy from Radiohead, a guy from Radiohead.
Okay, he's Johnny Greenwood, and he's fantastic.
I don't like Radiohead.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, Coco has animated features sewn up.
Absolutely, which is deserving.
I'm so happy to see that it looks like A Fantastic Woman is going to win. Foreign language film can't actually be predicted. It could always be anything. Allegedly, the front runner is A Fantastic Woman, and I think that will hold.
I hope so. I loved that movie. Yeah. I currently have highlighted The Insult, but I also saw it the most recently.
Yeah.
It surprised me how good it was. And then you said something like, at the Critics' Choice Awards, you were like, yeah, Fantastic Woman seems like it can't win anything. So, but like you said, it's so hard to predict.
This is a really weird, always a really weird category. It's one of those things where, you know, if you want to see some great movies from around the world,
watch the shortlist movies. That's one thing I love about those categories.
Yeah, make a point to watch things that are either nominated for Best Foreign Language Film or on the shortlist for nomination. It's always very, very illuminating. That said, it's very hard to predict. But my favorite movie not made in America this year was indeed A Fantastic Woman.
Okay.
I can't recommend that highly enough.
Also, Pittsburgh, that's coming to Regent Square Theater, I think, the week after the Oscars.
Yes. And I don't know what's going to win Best Documentary Feature. Faces, Places, I guess?
So if she had not gotten that, outside of the Oscar night Oscar recently,
yeah,
I would say definitely Faces, Places. After we watch it, maybe I'll have a stronger opinion. Last Man in Aleppo.
I haven't watched that one yet.
It's essentially a sequel to The White Helmets.
Okay.
It has one of the characters, one of the human beings from The White Helmets in it. And the director was unable to come to the ceremony because of the travel ban.
Yeah, that adds an interesting twist.
Yeah. So that is my guess.
That you could be right. There are some experts predicting a win for Icarus.
Ugh. That is my second. That's the movie I liked the least after Blade Runner.
It's so damn boring. I mean, I know no listeners care right now. Icarus is a movie where a guy set out to make a documentary about what it's like physically to take all of the steroids and HGH and
it's like a Super Size Me for doping.
And yeah, and inadvertently ended up documenting the Russian doping scandal as it happened. And you hear that and you think, wow, that sounds really interesting. It's so not.
And it's also just such an example of white man falls up.
Yeah.
I did not like it.
And it's on Netflix, so I think a lot of people are going to go, hey, we should watch one documentary this year. Let's don't do it. Run away. Watch Strong Island, which is not going to win at all, but is an excellent documentary. All right. Let's get into it. I will present the lay of the land, and then you break it down.
Got it.
How's that sound?
Sounds good.
There are 9 nominees. 5 of them are completely irrelevant in terms of having any chance to win. The remaining 4, there are a statistically significant series of alternate universes where somehow Lady Bird pulls off a weird upset win.
Right.
Things go weird with the preferential voting. If you want to know about preferential voting, Google it. Two people explaining preferential voting is the most boring things ever, so we won't do it here.
And apparently there are several podcasts that have already done it for you.
Yes. Or just on YouTube. You can get it done in 3 or 4 minutes. Lady Bird has a sliver of a chance.
Right.
But fundamentally, it's between Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, The Shape of Water, and Get Out.
Yeah.
The smart money, or at least the betting odds, have Three Billboards in a slight lead over Shape of Water, and Get Out trailing a little bit behind that. But once you consider the preferential voting, sorry, it gets very confusing trying to figure out which one of those is going to win.
So right now in my spreadsheet, I have Get Out highlighted. But talking about it more,
yeah,
I'm talking myself out of it. Because I think my argument that Three Billboards won't win is that a lot of people are going to have that 8 or 9. Right? Because there are people who dislike that movie. And I want I have an 8. Right? For
right.
me.
Right.
I am representative of some people in the Academy, I'm sure. And that's also going to be true of Get Out, though. There are old white men who...
Don't like a horror movie being in there at all.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Shape of Water... I have not... I've got one friend on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Randois.
Mm-hmm.
He did not like it. Everybody else seems to at least think it's okay.
Right. And the way that this voting happens favors consensus over...
But you need a lot of ones.
Support.
So that's the thing.
You do. You need a lot of ones or twos.
Right.
Yes, you need a lot of ones. Sorry.
Right. But Shape of Water is going to be a lot of people's four.
Yeah. But the way that... We're not going to explain preferential voting. Just trust all the things we say. The way that that cycles through... I can see more of those votes ending up with Shape of Water, maybe. Then, my theory is that the way the voting is going to shake out is somehow if Shape of Water is second, then the Get Out votes are going to end up with Shape of Water, and if Get Out is second, the Shape of Water votes are going to end up with Get Out. And one way or another, those two things being the 2 and 3 choices are going to help the one that's ahead jump over Three Billboards and win.
Right. Or Three Billboards might win, maybe.
This is a lot of words to say. The most likely thing, if you want to really dumb it down, still is Three Billboards winning.
Right.
It's a movie that a lot of people think is really good, particularly the largest members of the Academy voting.
Right, and it won the Golden Globe. It won the SAG Best Ensemble. It won the BAFTAs. So it's the front runner.
Yes. If you are filling out a pool and you want to just be do that conservatively, put Three Billboards down.
Right.
If you really, like... In all of the thinking I'm doing about it, and also my heart, and also having watched Moonlight win last year, suggests to me that one of Shape of Water or Get Out is going to win, and I feel like it's Shape of Water.
Okay, and I think we'll see what I decide on Sunday before it starts.
So having you on a prediction podcast,
I'm gonna say
is
get
not
out
enough to get you to lock in.
Here's
a prediction.
The thing. I'm gonna say Get Out for the purposes of this podcast.
Okay.
In my spreadsheet, by the way, I have 3 tabs. First guess, which I make the day the nominations come out, podcast guess, and final guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is a level of commitment that I do not have.
I've got like a 9-tab spreadsheet about the Oscars. Yeah. So
one of these years, I should really just give you my votes, because I know someone who's doing more work than me. Anyway, that'd probably get me kicked out.
Yeah, don't do that.
I'm not going to do that.
Don't do that.
I'm just going to let you break all the ties like I did this year.
There you go.
This is really interesting. This is, usually if you're an avid Oscar follower, you go into that last quarter of the night with the thing you assume is going to win, and maybe you're hoping for an upset.
Right.
And even as you're hoping for an upset, you know what the thing that might upset it is going to be. You went in last year knowing, yeah, La La Land's going to win.
But everybody likes Moonlight the best.
But everyone likes Moonlight the best. Oh, Moonlight did win. You didn't think the name of any of those other movies.
Right.
It was just front runner and potential spoiler. This is a year where any one of those three could win.
Yeah.
And there's even another one that is not out of the question.
Right.
And man, are we going to look dumb when they say the award goes to Phantom Thread. Which I developed a conspiracy theory that it was the actual front runner the moment nominations were announced, because it got so many more nominations than anyone anticipated.
That is true.
And it's super fancy, and it's very, like, it has just enough old Hollywood suspense. And I was like, no, Phantom Thread is going to win. And man, do I hope I'm wrong.
I do think you're wrong.
I'm glad that you think I'm wrong.
I enjoyed Phantom Thread so much more than I expected to. So much more.
No one has seen Phantom Thread. If all of Phantom Thread were as good as the scene where she makes the omelet and he eats it, it would be the best movie of the year.
Okay.
That scene was great.
Yes.
That scene was Kubrick briefly possessed Paul Thomas Anderson and directed that scene.
I was enjoying it very much throughout. That is obviously the best scene.
I just hate that guy. This conversation happened on a podcast that people know about, WTF, where Marc Maron was trying to explain this movie to Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh.
And she was like, I'll see it. Wait, is it just a guy and he's a genius and he's an asshole all the time, but everyone is in love
Jennifer
with him
Lawrence,
because he's an artist?
Mother?
And he was like, yeah, that's what it is. He's like, yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Jennifer Lawrence, star of Mother.
Yep. Because he brought up, he also, go listen to that. It's really good. He also brought up that interpretation of Mother, and she was like, that's not it at all. No, not even a little bit.
Oh, that's my interpretation of Mother, and I will hold on to it for my whole life.
Did you know that they're not dating anymore?
I did know, and he is dating some other young woman.
Yeah, I mean, that gets...
He's gross.
Mother, not nominated for any Oscars. Should we... And let's conclude tonight.
Yes.
By briefly checking in with one of our favorite Twitter and Tumblr accounts, This Had Oscar Buzz.
Ah, yes. Joe Reed.
Let's pour one out for movies that thought they had a chance as soon as I pull it up on Twitter, because I just had this idea. If you don't know what this is, go to Twitter or Tumblr and search for This Had Oscar Buzz. That is a rolling collection of movies that spent hundreds of thousands of dollars sending coffee table books and, intricately designed for your consideration pamphlets to people like me for no point. And this year's inductees into this hallowed hall include Downsizing.
Yes, which I saw in anticipation of the Oscars Death Race.
That was the thing that happened. Hey, while we're talking about Matt Damon, Suburbicon. I definitely didn't see that. It was supposed to be awful. Wind River. Wind River was really good.
Mm.
Yeah, you're not a big fan. What's his name? Nicholas Sheridan. I might be making that up.
That sounds like a person.
The Hell or High Water guy.
Oh, that is who that is. Yes.
Yeah, this is his directorial debut.
Oh,
too.
Okay.
But Elizabeth Olsen is a national treasure.
Okay.
She's great. A United Kingdom. Do you even recognize the poster?
I am familiar with that movie. I actually turned it on one day and promptly fell asleep.
That was the correct response. Detroit. Man, that felt like a can't miss.
Yeah.
And then it was just kind of a movie.
We were also talking about The Beguiled earlier.
I love Sofia Coppola so much, and I'm running out of reasons why. Lost in Translation was a long time
also
ago.
Also, it does not hold up.
Oh.
It's racist.
Oh, I can never watch it again.
I don't watch it again.
It has such this beautiful place of like whimsy and heartbreak in my mind that
yeah.
is completely unfettered.
It was so beautiful to me when I was 20.
And then you realize it's a whole lot of Asians are weird.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to watch that. Wonder
Bill
Wheel.
Murray was robbed, though. Let's be real. Yeah.
Who did he lose to?
Sean Penn in Mystic River.
Oh, one of Sean Penn's two thefts of an Oscar.
Correct. And I will never forget John Feitner. We watched that episode in his basement apartment. That episode. That year's Oscars.
Did you catch
Oscars.
The new episode of the Oscars, everyone?
And And I will never forget him angrily imitating Sean Penn screaming, "My daughter!"
Yeah. Watch the Oscars, everybody. I don't... just imitate John Feitner imitating Sean Penn again.
"My daughter!" Thank you.